meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning into The Winds Have Changed. Father Tom Coyce here. We're recording this on a Wednesday, which means it's a brain-wrinkling Wednesday.
Holy, here we go again, Batman.
Yeah, Batman always around. Gotta love that Robin. It's Wednesday in Holy Week, and I want to start off with a continuation of the story or saga that's going on over there across the pond in jolly old England. I think I mentioned this a little bit before, and it's a very interesting, very articulate, very, prayerful and religious. Black Anglican deacon is making some waves because he spoke out against the Church of England's acceptance of same-sex marriage. I want to use it as a springboard to sharing some thoughts about what's going on in our country, especially with the indictment of former President Donald Trump. I want to share with you an angle that I don't think you probably heard in most of the news outlets, as we say. I want to share some thoughts as a priest confessor. You know, as priests hear confessions, and we try to give advice. And if I could share some thoughts as a priest confessor to, not that Donald or anyone else is going to ask me for advice, but I want to
You're
going to
need a bigger boat.
That's what I mean. Share some ideas from a different angle, which I do think is needed. And us people of faith can look at all the same news stories, but with some different insights, shall we say. Okay. But to start off from the deacon in England, again, he was canceled from the Church of England because he spoke out against the Church of England's acceptance of same-sex marriage. So he's starting off, he's being interviewed on another show, he mentions right off the bat that he's been canceled. So here's what, I'm going to have to stop it a couple times because it's very much a situation that focuses on one of my favorite themes, and I imagine one of yours as well, if you're a faithful listener to The Winds of Change, especially on Brain Wrinkling Wednesdays. That ever present, ever sticky subject of the church-state relationship. How does the church and the state get along? What are the blessings? What are the curses? Et cetera, et cetera. So here's the sticky. His name is Calvin Robinson. Goes like this.
Yeah, but
the church itself is entangled with the state. So yeah, we do have bishops in the House of Lords, the Lords spiritual, who are supposed to act as almost like a moral compass to our legislators to make sure that any laws being passed through the House of Lords are moral in fibre. Whether they do that or not is another conversation entirely. But it also means, you know, being an established church has its pros in that everyone in this country belongs to a parish. Everyone lives in a parish because of our parochial system, meaning that everyone has a priest praying for them, whether they go to church or not. I think that's so important.
And stop there for a second. His first point is just an explanation about the idea. He's talking about the relationship between the church and state, and he's saying that in the Church of England, the church is supposed to act as a moral conscience for the civil legislators in the parliament. I mean, he quickly adds, whether they do it or not is another story. Obviously, he wants to raise the flag of saying they're not doing it. And of course, the sad or eerie reflection or shadow of that is our Catholic bishops acting and doing their job as a moral compass, you know, acting as the formators of the moral conscience of the political legislators. Now, he's going to go on to say that the relationship between the church and state is much closer. It's much more joined at the hip than we have here in the United States, and which is a little bit of an irony if you know about world history, in the sense that the United States of America, when it was being founded, certainly took pride in trying to say, hey, the church and state are going to be separated. There's going to be a sense of religious freedom such that no religious body is going to be able to tell the legislators what for or wow. what is
You just wrinkled my brain, choice. Man.
Yeah, that's brain wrinkling, no doubt. It's just... And as a matter of fact, the colony of Virginia, which turned into the state of Virginia, of course, was primarily Anglican. And so you had this sense of religion from England, which had this joined at the hip understanding of the relationship between church and state, almost so that there was no room for disagreement or even different kinds of proclamations, of laws. I think this is a sticky situation, but if we see that issue, it's where the difference between something can be immoral but not illegal, something can be a moral obligation but not a legal obligation, you know. So it's a delicate relationship, that relationship between church and state. But it's just an interesting irony of history that England did not have a doctrine of separation of church and state, but it was the Church of England and the people who settled the United States, especially in the early days, were Anglican, Church of England type people, and they soon insisted on a separation of church and state. Let's go a little bit farther here with what I guess you can still call him Deacon Calvin. If he's canceled from the Church of England, he might be a seminarian in search of a bishop to ordain him. Boy, if I was a bishop in the United States, I would certainly have him on. I'd be having him in my office to invite him. Here it goes. Let's see. We go a little farther. He's saying.
So there are lots of pros to it, but of course it's linked into our schooling system, our legal system. It's linked into everything, which means that there's a lot of pressure. So we have parliamentarians right now, as of this week, putting forward bills to say you didn't go far enough to the Church of England, saying you've allowed the blessing of same-sex unions, but you haven't allowed same-sex marriages within the church. And if you don't go farther, we will push through legislation that means we will override you. So parliamentarians are trying to force the church's hands, not understanding at all that the church has a teaching and you can't just change doctrine. Parliamentarians or politicians certainly can't change church doctrine. And this is part of the problem with us, I suppose, with our lack of authority in the Anglican church, in that people seem to think you can. And I don't think they'd ask the Catholic church to do the same. I don't think they'd ask Muslims to do the same, to, you know, allow same-sex marriages within their mosques. Of course they wouldn't. So why do they do this to the Church of England? It's because they feel like they own it, because it's the state church. They feel like it belongs to the state, but that's not what it's supposed to be.
Isn't that a great insight, Jody, saying that the parliamentarians are pushing the church to say you're not going just by allowing same-sex unions, you're not going far enough, because we want same-sex marriage. And so the Church of England is sort of like putting their, okay, we'll give you this much, but we're not going to go any farther. Unfortunately, the parliamentarians say, well, you have to go farther. That's been a mistake here at the very beginning. And that's what I think even a lot of our Catholic bishops were suckered into when they said, well, okay, we can be open to same-sex unions. So that's the one of the little aspects of Cardinal George that I think he was wrong on, unfortunately, much as I love the guy. And I think he's super smart and did a great, great, great job. However, he said on a number of occasions, well, we can be okay if the state wants to make some kind of relationship. We'll call them same-sex unions. We won't call it marriage, but you can call it same-sex unions. Anyways, that's what this deacon in England is saying, that the Church of England is perfectly fine with same-sex unions, but the parliamentarians are saying, well, but the gay population isn't fine with it. They don't want just to be united in some kind of civil ceremony. They want the blessing of God. They want it to be a marriage, just like marriage between a man and a woman. So, and he's right on target by pointing out that the Church of England, the parliamentarians, think they can do this because of the church, because it's a state-run church, they think they own it, which is what they do. They do own it. So we made the Church of England. We, the civil authorities, made the Church of England. So we're not going to listen to the religious voices if disagrees with our voices. It's a very powerful little insight. Let's go a little bit farther. This is what the deacon goes on to say.
The day-to-day, is that the reality? I mean, obviously you can make the theoretical and all of that discussion that, you know, the church is over the state and works with that to guide that. But in the day-to-day, is it that situation he's just described? I mean, if Parliament passes a bill and there it is, are the bishops of the Church of England bound to now do what the Parliament has told them?
Oh, yeah, because our canon law is law of the land. And so when our bishops pass something in synod, they pass it as a canon law, meaning it's English.
Okay, you see what he gets? Sometimes that English accent makes it a little hard to understand. He's saying, when the bishops pass something in synod, it's called canon law. We use that term, too, in the Catholic Church, that when the religious leaders pass something, we call it canon law. But listen to what he says, which is the reality in the Church of England, but it's not the reality certainly in the United States or any place where Catholic canon law comes into play. It goes like this.
Law and vice versa. So if something passes in the House of Parliament, they can override essentially canon law, which is why we haven't had a change in doctrine for years, because we cannot change the Book of Common Prayer. It's been practically impossible to get it updated, which is a good thing, because at least that offers some stability, because we don't have a magisterium. But if Parliament does do this, it will have an effect. And I don't know what that means for people within the church, because I don't see much resistance. Like I said, most of the bishops are liberal. The Archbishop of Canterbury has suggested that disestablishmentism is on the table, which means that we could separate church and state if the state tries to force the church's hand. But I can't see that happening.
Isn't that an interesting little twist there at the end? The Bishop of Canterbury, he's like the Pope of the Church of England. And he's saying disestablishmentism is on the table. In other words, the relationship between church and state that was started back in the 1500s, in other words, the king created the Church of England, and now the bishop is going to try. He's saying what's on the table is what Thomas More lost his head over, really, is what it comes down to, because Thomas More was certainly wanted to be a good subject of the king in the matters of secular affairs, civil affairs.
Wow.
But
you just wrinkled my brain.
That's brain wrinkling for sure. And so the Archbishop of Canterbury is saying disestablishmentism is on the table. In other words, maybe we, now here's the fork in the road. Will we go in the direction that the United States went in and say there is so much religious freedom that the that any religion will do, any religion has absolute freedom. He had mentioned earlier in that little clip, if you caught it, that the Parliament wouldn't think of forcing the Muslim community to accept same-sex marriage. And also they don't pressure the Catholic Church to do it either, though Catholic Church is folding under its own pressure, as it were, as witnessed by what's going on in Germany, right? So that the idea that disestablishmentism is on the table, I don't think the parliamentarians will go for it. They like owning the church. And if the bishops succeed in separating themselves from the state, then they're going to have to be more Catholic than they've ever been. Either they're going to have to create a British Pope who is absolute authority over all things religious in England, or they're going to have to petition to join the Roman Pontiff. And so quite a fascinating situation we have here, right? Anyways, I think we should take the first break. I wanted to start with this discussion on the church-state relationship and use it as a foil to share a few ideas about former President Trump's situation as being indicted. I do have a different take that I haven't heard on the news outlets just yet. So hopefully I'll be able to make some sense of a different, as I say, like from a priest-confessor perspective, okay? Anyways, I'll be right back. Let's take our first break, okay, Nick? I am Father Tom Coyes, guest host on The Winds of Change. You are listening to the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI. We are also AM 750 WNDC.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Lent, a season for prayer, fasting, and almsgiving.
Lent is, yes, a time of reflection, and it's a hard time sometimes, but I really look forward to the liturgies of the Triduum. It takes us back to the beginning when God created the earth out of his great love for us, and to the time, unfortunately, of the crucifixion where Jesus offered himself for us, then to the wonderful happiness of Easter and the resurrection.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in. I want to share some thoughts about what's going on with the Trump indictment from a priest-confessor perspective. First of all, I don't think we should ignore the fact that this is happening during Holy Week. You could call it a coincidence, but I think I sense a more spiritual interpretation that people that aren't too much into the Paschal, the suffering, death, the passion of Christ, might connect these two ideas. A person standing up for something that he really believes in, where he certainly could walk away. He could have easily said, I don't need these headaches. You made it to be president. His opposition definitely wants him to go away. He could easily say, okay, I'll go away quietly. I wonder if John Adams felt a little bit like that. Remember the beginning of the United States, John Adams was a one-term president. He was major in founding the United States, guiding its constitution, and all these good things. But the war. Oh, yeah, there you go. A few nice people come into the studio here with me. Thank you very much. Anyways, so he's a man, you could tell he's not just fighting for himself, right? I think that's the key. The fact that he's super rich is not a insignificant part of this here drama, because it brings into question the fact that just amassing a lot of wealth and living the good life is the ultimate goal of life. The fact that he's discovered this mission to help save the United States of America from a certain kind of decline is evidence that he's doing something not in a selfish method. A selfish way. So the fact that this is happening in Holy Week, I think we should, number one, bring it to our prayer, pray that it ends well, that it goes through well, that it's I will say that it's part of a great plan beyond him, beyond me, beyond you, beyond everyone, even guided by God, to help this country recover its sense of right living and moral compass. Now, I could just hear what many people would say, that how could you possibly think that Donald Trump is trying to bring about a greater sense of the moral compass that is lost when the problem at heart of this indictment is a relationship with a porn star. That's Stormy Daniels' character, as it were, right? So if I were the priest confessor, I would certainly want him to address that issue. I think he would, even though he's not addressing it in public ways. It certainly seems reasonable to think that in private matter, in the heart of hearts, in his conscience, pillow talk with his wife, right, Melania. He's sorry. He's repentant. He's regretful. Who wouldn't be? The fact that he's happily married, and although divorced before, right? He stands as a strange, a very odd agent of change for bringing about a greater sense of moral clarity in the United States. So, but if he's not at all repentant, which I'd be very amazed if I was his priest confessor, let's say, I could even approach this situation like the priest chaplains of the Civil War era. One of my favorite priest chaplains of the Civil War era is Father Corby. He's one of the early presidents of Notre Dame University out there in South Bend. Anybody who's been to Notre Dame University knows there's a statue of Father Corby right outside of Corby Hall, where the Holy Cross priests live. He was...
I am the gift.
There's a powerful story in his memoirs. He, as the chaplain in the Civil War time, he was sometimes called on to be a priest confessor to those who were scheduled for execution, even especially the runaway soldiers. You tried to run away from your regiment and you were caught, you were accused of treason, and you could be killed. You could be put in front of a firing squad for running away, and many did, and many were caught. And in Father Corby's memoirs, he talks about how he would counsel a young man who was scheduled for execution. He was, of course, super nervous, super mad, super anxious about going in front of the firing squad. Father Corby says that he went to talk to him. I think, gosh, how would you talk to a person that's set for such a punishment, as it were? And he talked to him about joining his suffering to the suffering of Christ. Christ was innocent. He died on the cross for us guilty. If you are able in one way or another to join your suffering to that of Christ, you will for sure be granted the crown of glory in heaven. And indeed, in Father Corby's memoirs, it talks about how he, after talking to the soldier in that manner, he didn't get him released from his scheduled execution. He went to the firing squad, but he went with calmness and, I'm not going to say a smile on his face, but a kind of resoluteness, a kind of calmness that he didn't have before, because he was able to join his death with the death of Christ, that Christ sacrificed and gave all for us, and we will just join our suffering with that of Christ. So I could say former President Donald Trump, whatever suffering you're going through now, and this is terrible, seems quite difficult, join your suffering to that of Christ, especially because this is happening in Holy Week. The whole Christian world is celebrating the unjust punishment of the God who came to save us. And we are all supposed to join our suffering with that of Christ. And it's not, and here's the Catholic twist to the spiritual question is, in our Catholic theology, we don't just say Christ suffered and died for us in the sense of going back to that Civil War example, let us say the priest was counseling the soldier scheduled for execution, and the priest said to the captain, all right, shoot me instead of my this young corporal that ran away. That would be an example of Christ dying for us. In the sense he took the punishment that we deserved, right? You know, that's the common phrase. We do have an example of something like that with the story of St. Maximilian Kolbe, right? In World War II, when a prisoner escaped and Father Kolbe said, kill me instead of the man who you selected. But of course, the two cases are not identical. The prisoner of war, actually the one who was scheduled to be killed was not the one who escaped. It was the Nazi guards just picked 10 random people. It's not that they caught the people that ran away and they're going to execute them. The fact that one person ran away, the commandant of the prison camp said, now 10 have to die for the one. And so it wasn't a sense of you're more guilty than another. So the prison guards in that situation were, they accepted Father Maximilian. Look at that. It is Father Maximilian Kolbe versus Father Kolbe, not Kolbe, but Father Kolbe from the Civil War era. So anyways, joining our suffering with that of Christ is not just captured in the idea that, which is most Protestant ministers try to teach their congregations, that Jesus died for our sake. He took the punishment that was meant for us. Catholic teaching goes a little bit deeper in the sense that, yes, it was Christ's death on the cross that is the ground of salvation, but that doesn't mean that we are not asked to share our suffering with that of Christ. Are you following me?
Wow. Just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's very much brain wrinkling. So going back to the example of Father Kolbe and his condemned runaway Union soldier. So on the one hand, if Father Kolbe says, shoot me instead of, the Union captain would not go for that because that punishment was being inflicted to punish the guilty. And he knew that Father Kolbe was not the guilty one, and it wouldn't teach any lesson, and it wouldn't even teach the rest of the soldiers a lesson. Part of the reason why in those war situations that a captain would execute a runaway soldier was to teach the other soldiers not to run away. But if he had killed Father Kolbe, it wouldn't teach the other soldiers that same lesson. So we are looking at Jesus Christ and his death, and we will unite our suffering with him. And that's the lesson that I would try to share with former President Donald Trump. I'd say, this is terrible, this is a suffering, join it to Christ. I can't believe he doesn't feel it, that he doesn't sense it. I know I do, and I'm sure millions of others do too. So, Okay, now we got to shift here because there are legal issues being kicked around here, and I have another twist on what I've heard the lawyers talking about too. But we'll take another break, okay, Nick? I want to again use my the wisdom of a priest confessor in talking about what's legally going on here. Anyways, let's take that next break. I'm Father Tom Coy's guest host on The Winds of Change. We are the new EWTN Catholic radio voice for Chicagoland. We are WSFI 88.5 FM and WNDZ 750 AM.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, and you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when Masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Okay, hello everyone. God bless you for keeping with us here on this brain-wrinkling Wednesday. At least that's when we're recording it, whenever you're listening to it. Remember, everyone in the modern world should know what podcasts are, and you should be able to play podcasts on your devices at your own convenient time, whether you're driving in a car or having a smoke, going for a walk, et cetera, et cetera. Anyways, remember, Podbean is the overall website you go to, Podbean, and then you look for Chicago Winds of Change show with Father Anthony Bush, and you can look for the Wednesday shows, the Wednesday Brain Wrinkling with Father Coy's, or for all the other wonderful people we have here at the Winds of Change. So, okay. So, looking at the Trump indictment, again, from a priest confessor's perspective, the lawyers are putting out the defense of President Trump is primarily because the judge, in this case, Judge Bragg, didn't explain what the crime was that he's being indicted for, in the sense that the judge, had to elevate a state misdemeanor charge, namely messing up the business records where the money was transferred and categorized in his business log for the paying off of the Stormy Daniels. We'll call her a pinup girl, but of course she was a lot more than that, let's say. Anyways, so the legal side of it is, well, there's no crime, even though, and I would again emphasize the fact that he should be very repentant of the sin, but I could easily want to see him not punished because it wasn't a crime to the extent that the judge is trying to he's trying to accuse him of a crime that would in essence prevent him from running for president again, which he already is. He's trying to either get the basic population to think I would never vote for a man who is accused of a crime, or else somehow keep him in jail during the campaign time, one way or another. Although that first option of trying to convince people they would never want someone as a president who is in jail, just think of the many cases in history, like a Nelson Mandela, right, from South Africa. He was in jail for a great while, and then when he came out, he was easily elected president, right? So there's that. So I want him to be very repentant for the sin, not only for his relationship with God, but with his relationship with his wife. I would think
sometimes she would. In life we are confronted with the tyranny of choice.
Hello there. I think I don't know if I was talking over another commercial. We'll need another commercial break in a little while, but let me finish this point. That Melania, his wife, Melania, I hope and pray, want to be her spiritual director too. To say, is he repentant? Has he changed his ways? And at this point, I think you would say she sees a different man than before. At least we hope so. And plus, I'm pretty sure I read way back when they were running for the first time that she was herself a pinup girl. She posed naked for some, I don't know if it was Playboy or some other platform like that back in Europe, maybe even Russia, I'm not sure, I think Eastern Europe. Anyways, and so, and I could just hear some more, some voices say from the feminist perspective, oh, you mean that just because she posed naked in magazines that now that gives her husband the right to cheat on her? Of course, it doesn't follow logically like that, but you can't expect to participate in an industry like the porn industry and feel like you're exempt or immune from the problems that that go on. So, yeah, anyways, I could see he just has that, he needs that sense of repentance, but the sense of where's the crime, it doesn't make sense that the judge is upset about the crime of his having an affair with Stormy Daniels, and it doesn't make sense that's what he's most upset about. He's not most upset about that. Goodness gracious, could we take our third break right now? And we'll be right back, okay? I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to The Winds of Change. We are the new EWTN Catholic Radio Voice for Chicagoland, WSFI, AM 750, WNDZ, and 88.5 FM.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
This Lent, is there someone you need to forgive? Venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen tells the story of one of the most exalted descriptions of forgiveness he had ever read, about a Russian bishop who was sentenced to death by communist authorities in Russia. His last prayer for his executioners was this: Heavenly Father, I offer up for the sins of these men and my own sins the death of your son. But I also forgive my executioners as you forgive me. And so on Judgment Day, when these men stand before you, the angels will ask, what charges brought against these men? There will be no one to charge them with guilt. They are already forgiven. Who do you need to forgive this Lent? I'm Jim Littleton, forming FaithfulFamilies.com. God love you.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. I'm trying to give a different perspective on the Donald Trump indictment situation from a priest confessor point of view. So it doesn't make sense that the judge and many that are with him, of course there are many, are ultimately mad at his infidelity. It doesn't make sense that that's the crime that they are most abhorrent to. We got to stop that kind of behavior. It just doesn't make sense because so much of the other legislation, so much of the other issues are all for sexual liberality. Nobody on, quote, the left is speaking up strongly for making such things into crimes. And I wouldn't even say as a priest, I wouldn't like if somebody proposed to if somebody had an affair, they would be thrown in jail for 10 years or something. I'd say that's a mortal sin. You got to correct your life. There could be a lot of things and it could ruin someone else's life, but don't think we'd want to turn it into a federal offense or even a capital offense, like what happens in the Old Testament when a woman caught in adultery was stoned to death. And of course, that shows the great inequality of man and woman. You know, why the man didn't get stoned with the woman is the great it's a great problem there, shall we say. So anyways, but what does make sense is this, that they're not really mad at the fact that he had loose morals in that sense. They're really mad because they saw him standing up for moral principles. Remember this, I've played this before and it's good to remember it again. This was the reaction when the day after his election, right? Remember this?
That's what's so hurtful about this, Brian.
Everybody is crying and so upset, and it is the end of their world.
Feels like the end of the world.
We were on Lifetime last night, and I was slowly getting drunk, is what happened to me.
How did this happen? Experienced politician versus racist fake gynecologist.
Get your abortions now. Because we're going to be sick and we're going to have to live with it.
You're awake, by the way. You're not having a terrible, terrible dream. Also, you're not...
This was a white lash. This was a white lash against a changing country,
It was a white lash against a black president in part. And that's the part.
Okay, that's where even the silliness of that reaction. Get your abortions now because we're going to, I blanked out that, the word that she used, of course. Get your abortions now because they see a world without the right to abortion is the end of their world. That's what they're fighting for. And that makes sense where the judge would be trying to stop Trump from running again because he got so far and they don't want it to go farther. We got the Dobbs decision to overturn Roe versus Wade, but it certainly isn't the fullness. We don't have the basic Christian moral teaching of respect for life at all stages enshrined in our laws. So in this sense, and I gotta say, and I would want to encourage Trump as his priest confessor to keep going on his conversion. He's converted. He's not the same kind of guy he was. There's no way you could see him as the same person. Is his conversion complete? Has it really been? He's not a saint, but I think he's on that road. So I'd encourage him to keep on that road. And eerily, he seems like a St. Paul figure in the sense that St. Paul was the last person the early Christians would have thought would help Christianity. St. Paul was the one who killed Christians. And politically speaking, I've always kind of thought that in order to get our moral compass back in a better sense and more in line with the commandments and all the rest, I always kind of thought that we'd need the kind of pure-hearted, squeaky clean politician to lead the way, you know, because every time a politician would step up and say, "I'm for the right for life," and then they'd find out sexual affairs in his life, his candidacy would be sunk. Why? Because of hypocrisy. And when Mitt Romney was running for president, I think many people of the Christian sensibilities thought, hey, he's the good guy. He's a squeaky, clean man. You're not going to find skeletons in his closet. They tried, of course, we remember that. But a strong, faithful Mormon with all their strict moral lifestyle and all the rest, you couldn't, in one sense, find a more squeaky, clean Christian man than Mitt Romney. I thought, okay, that's the kind of politician we're going to need in order to recover Christian moral sense. Kind of like in the early days of the church, you'd need Saint Peter, who was the good fisherman and the good Jew, following Jesus. You figure, okay, well, and he had his role, of course, to play in it, but St. Paul played a role with the pagans that, in other words, the way God twisted our logic and say, okay, in order to help stop the persecution of Christians, I'm going to take the greatest persecutor of Christians, convert him, and he's gonna do a better job converting pagans to Christianity than someone who had no need of conversion in the first place. That's why I see, Trump. He could easily recognize. Okay, he did a bad sin with the storm in Daniel. Hopefully, he's repentant. Hopefully, he's not doing it anymore. I don't gotta believe that's the case. And so the ones who are there ready to attack him can't just do what they used to do with a political candidate and just point it out. Like, there are so many examples of especially Republican candidates running for an office, and they were promoting right to life, they were promoting family values, and then in their past they'd find some kind of scandal where the person paid for an abortion or had an affair, etc., and therefore that candidate would be canceled out of the way. And so it's kind of always hoping, well, gosh, we need a politician who's going to not only promote family values, but not have any scandals in the past that show evidence that he didn't live by family values. Then Trump comes along, and it's sort of obvious he didn't live by family values. And yet he is going to try to be a person who promotes family values. And so because you could call it a conversion, as it were. It is. And yet it's maybe the way God would be using a most unlikely candidate to achieve a godly result. I got to believe that the millions of people that are supporting him, you know, even when he left Florida, on the news you were able to see the hundreds of people lining the streets, waving flags, supporting him. Reminded me of when Pope John Paul II did his travels, right? He would go around in his Popemobile and people would be lining up on the sidewalks supporting him. But I got to believe a lot of those people on the sidewalks supporting him have had skeletons in their closet as well, as big, maybe bigger, maybe less. But certainly the fact that they're repentant and they're seeing that we need as a society to move away from those faults, those sins, at least in the basic compartments of life, you know, the people who get pregnant should not abort, and they could give the child up for adoption, or keep the child, etc. And or the basic sense of marriage is a relationship between a man and a woman, that there's a radical difference between what a man and a man do in the bed and what a man and a woman do in bed. One is called sex, the other is called hedonism, I guess you could say that way. And so that's kind of the real twist of logic that God often uses. And I don't think it should be ignored, especially as this is happening in Holy Week. Now, again, we're not saying that Trump is a saint, but he's being used by God in a very powerful way, unlike so many others. So, anyways. Hope that gave a little different twist to one of the big news items of today. And I hope you have a wonderful Easter weekend. Do get to the Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Holy Saturday, Easter Vigil, and of course, Easter Sunday morning Mass. Don't let this weekend go without a real presence in church, okay? I'm Father Tom Coise. You've been listening to the Winds of Change. We are 88.5 FM WSFI and 750 AM WNDZ. Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the
the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time.